StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies called Startup.Radio, and you're listening to StartupRad.io. Today, I welcome another guest. Hey, Wolfgang, how you doing?
Hello, Joe.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And today we talk to you as a blockchain investor. But first, let us get to know you a little bit. I was, as always, stalking you a little bit on LinkedIn, and I found that you have not always been a blockchain investor. This is not surprising for everybody who sees both of us. We have both a little bit gray in our beards, so we have been around before blockchain. You have been a consultant with Capgemini. You have been in private equity. And then there was a real surprise because you've been working at a radio station. Can you take us through your life, what you did, what you learned, and how you ended up in your current position?
See, Joe, we're brothers in mind. We've been both working for radio stations and had quite an experience there. So thanks very much for having me in your podcast. You asked me about my background. It's quite diverse. And that's also due to the fact that I have been working for over, 33 years now. I was born and raised in Bavaria, or Franconia to be specific, near Nuremberg, then studied business administration at the European Business School. And right after graduation, I joined the Maas Group as a marketing and sales trainee. So I really learned how to sell fast-moving consumer goods from the ground up, working through stores, working my way through agencies, and tried to earn my sports there. And it was when the wall came down that I decided this is the time to set up my own shop. And I asked Mars to become my first client, which they gladly did, and set up a promotion agency for about 2 years. But I must admit that became a bit boring after a while. So I did what I had always wanted to do right after university, but waited for a while because I thought it would be very helpful to get some operational experience. And that's when I joined Capgemini. It was then called Gemini Consulting. I think it's now called Capgemini Event, Invent. So the consulting part of the consulting company, which is mainly known for its IT work, and Gemini Consulting was the strategy consulting arm. And I worked in several industries from the retail trade to telecommunications. I worked at a perfume and a rome factory in Geneva to an oil company in Helsinki. I mean, I was there for 9 years, and there are so many projects you go through in these times. There are so many industries, and I was really glad having spent the time there, because the one thing that you learn in consulting is how to analyze the situation. And that has helped me throughout my career. And the other thing that's most helpful is the network that you build during your time in consulting, because I have so many people from those days that I'm still in regular contact with. And that's just a great asset to have. And then in 2000, I joined 3i, which is a large UK-based venture capital and private equity firm. Back then, there was 3i was very strong in venture capital. I think about 10 years ago, they sold the venture capital arm and added infrastructure to their buyout activities. But I had the privilege of working both in private equity and venture capital. So to those who are not too familiar with the two terms, I mean, venture capital, we all know it's It's financing startups. And private equity, depending on the geography where you are, has different connotations. Here in Europe, private equity usually refers to management buyouts or leveraged buyouts, where you take over large companies with equity and with leverage debt. And that's what I was doing, working both in venture capital and in private equity. You have to know that at the time in year 2000, that was the crash. I mean, it was a bit later, but it was people talk about crypto winter, but I went through the dot-com crash, and there are so many similarities to today's world, and it's great to compare. And for people who are seeing what is happening now for the first time, some things may be very weird. And if you've seen so many crises before, you know how to react. And I remember back in university, we had the Russian crisis in 87, which coincidentally we have again now as we record this podcast. And then we had the dot-com crash. Then we had that there was quite a long phase when it was very difficult for startups to get any kind of financing. It took years to recover, years, and there was no IPO for like 3-4 years. So that's just interesting to get this perspective on the various crises in the world. As an investor, I must say the only way was always up, because no matter how big the crisis was, the valuations after the crisis were much higher than before. I mean, if you compare the valuations of internet companies back in the year 2000 with crypto companies today, it's ridiculous. I mean, you would think of small companies if you look at 2000, and they are so huge now. So it's interesting to see that. Then in 2006, I joined Indeed Classic Radio, which is a publicly quoted radio station here in Germany. And that was also because I was looking at media, the media sector in private equity. So I had a certain affinity to this sector. And there was an opportunity which I really liked, but it didn't work out as planned. That's a long story, but it's when you come into a business where there's a strong and successful founder, who one day decides to leave the business and then come back, that's always an issue. But we parted on friendly terms, and I went back to private equity, investing in the turnaround space. That was during the years when we had the subprime crisis, and people and companies wanted to get rid of some of their affiliates. So that was a good time. And then later, I set up, and there's also a clear connection to what I'm doing now. I met Philipp Sandner and a few other partners, and we set up a company for the monetization of patents, because there was one time when turnaround private equity was over because the economy had gone up again, and that chapter was closed. And we looked at patents, because patents is just a huge asset class that we felt was completely under monetized in Europe. And so that's how I got into patents, which is obviously very close to technology. Patent monetization is a special kind of area. And I'm not talking about the litigation of patents. I'm talking about identifying patents from founders, from companies who at one stage have bought them, or even invented them, but don't need them anymore and want to monetize them. So we talked to the Samsungs, Apple, Googles of this world, and with a detailed claim chart, which means what is this patent all about. We went to these companies and discussed with them if there was an interest, and that was quite a successful endeavor. That came to a close when Google and Apple sort of fought in the courts of Texas. That was the great thing when the great clash when Android became bigger, and obviously Apple didn't like that too much, them being active in their turf, and that basically brought the entire patent system worldwide to a standstill, and valuations dropped by almost 90%. So we decided it was time to move on. And we were four partners then, and we went in different directions. And Philip started his blockchain career, which has been hugely successful, as he's done now. And my other partners did different things. And I decided to continue venture capital investing, private equity investing, and also taking things a bit slower as I went on a long vacation. But a few years ago, I got attracted again back in the venture capital sector by the opportunities that blockchain offers. And it is amazing to see there are so many opportunities out there, and the quality of founders and the scope of their ideas, the scope and the scalability of their ideas is just incredible. And I consider it as a huge privilege to be able to talk to inventors and founders every day and discuss their idea. So that was a long and winded way to answer your question where I come from. I always had the feeling that everything I've done basically prepared me for what I'm doing now, because there were so many learnings at every stage on the way that helped me tremendously now, be it to talk to the founders, to understand their businesses, because I've always also been a founder and I am a founder. So I very much share their worries. Share their ambition, and that's just a great job to have. For me, venture capital is the best job that you can have in the world.
Well, actually, admittedly, that was quite an exhaustive answer. No questions left open so far. We may only add that classic radio is really what it sounds like, so they are playing mainly classical music, and admittedly, I also listen to it from time to time.
It's a wonderful station, if I may add.
Yes, of course. You are now in the blockchain space, active in BlockRocket and BFG Blockchain Founders Group. Can you tell us what you do in both companies? And then we can talk a little bit about blockchain and where you see future, where you see interesting investment cases.
Yes, very happy to do that. I'll probably start with Blockchain Founders Group, and I'm one of the co-founders of this company. And Blockchain Founders Group, commonly abbreviated with BFG, is both an incubator / company builder and a venture capital arm. And I'm responsible for the venture capital part of BFG. And we have also the company builder part, and you may have seen our BFG Superstars program on the internet, because we currently have a cohort of over 20 companies and with, I think it's 40 founders, incubating their ideas, working with us to refine their business plan, and then basically compete for funding. So it's like an accelerator, like Entrepreneur First, Y Combinator. And we do this fully dedicated to the blockchain space. So whatever we do, whatever company we incubate or whatever company we finance, it has to have a blockchain-based business model. And there are various degrees of what role blockchain plays in the business model, but it should be something that is not possible or not possible to that degree without a blockchain or DLT-based architecture.
I vividly remember the times when you just had to add blockchain to your company name in order to get a huge boost in your share price. And I do believe those days are over, but you more or less recently just started with it. Why did you start in 2021 with a blockchain investment? Do you believe it's coming of age? There's a certain maturity that you see real business models in there?
Well, it's funny you should say this. You know, we just had the Super Bowl, and the saying back then was, if there is an ad for a technology during the Super Bowl halftime, it's probably time to leave the market. At least that's what they said about the big dot-com companies back in 2000. Now, during this Super Bowl halftime, they had plenty of crypto ads, crypto company ads. And it was quite funny because the question is, does the old saying still apply? Are we sort of peaking? Is this blockchain peak like it was the dot-com bubble burst back in 2000? I don't think so. I think we are at the very start, and people compare the stage that we are currently in to the internet of 1998. So that was about 5 years after Amazon was founded. I think it was even before Google was founded, if I'm not completely wrong. And people, well, try to understand what this whole internet is about. And you may remember this famous late night show appearance of Bill Gates when he sort of ridiculed the whole idea of internet, saying it's like a phone book online. Do I really need it? Do I need to watch television online? Who needs that? And, you know, if we look back at that, I mean, we just recognize how ridiculous it is. I think blockchain is at the very beginning. If I look at the circle of my friends outside of my immediate professional circle, like friends from sports and neighbors, they have little to no exposure at all to blockchain. And obviously, you always need to explain the difference between Bitcoin and blockchain, energy consumption, all these things. But I mean, many just don't even know that. So that shows me we are at the very, very beginning. And yes, lots of money will be lost in the startups that venture capital firms will invest now. Yes, lots of money will be lost. Lots of money will be made. But isn't it always like when you have a new technology that the pendulum needs to swing very hard to the other direction? And there are so many opportunities out there. What I said initially at the start is the business models that we see, they are super sophisticated. They have a clear benefits case. They have a path to profitability. It's not like with Amazon that you had to run a business for 20 years before you start to make any profit. So to answer your question, again, I'm being too long. Tell me if my answer should be shorter. I think we are at the very beginning of the crypto revolution.
Uh-huh. So we may differentiate for everybody who's listening to this. With blockchain, we mean the technical protocol, and with crypto, we mean what is tradable out there in terms of cryptocurrency tokens, cryptocurrency assets, however you want to call it. I would like to stay a little bit more in the blockchain space itself. I'm not necessarily a big crypto investor. I'm not necessarily known as a crypto podcast, so everybody would be happy about that. Just for a little bit of looking out into the future, we just said, okay, the adoption is just getting started. We see there huge swings. As you said, today is the day that Russian soldiers set foot into Ukraine. So the crypto markets and all the markets pretty much tanked. And I've read an article that said when the correlation is getting pretty big, meaning when the normal markets like the stocks, the Dow, they go down, also the crypto market goes down, it means it became mainstream because of the correlation go up. There are more professional investors in there, and there are more people reacting the same way as they do in equities. Setting this a little bit aside, we are looking on business models that should be profitable within the next few years. Without giving here a specific time frame, I do believe some of them can be profitable tomorrow. And as you said, some of them can be profitable in 20 years. What is currently the most interesting area? Because I do understand that blockchain is always pretty good when you want to have something written for almost eternity into a blockchain. Plus, if you want to track something, I have seen solutions for real estate, solutions for diamonds, and lots of stuff like this, artwork. What is currently the most interesting cases you see, especially since we're leaning heavily toward B2B, like B2B business models we are seeing now, really early in blockchain, that may become a big success in the future?
You were mentioning the business model of fractionalization, where basically you invest in a small chunk of a large asset, like you buy a piece of a house on the blockchain, or you buy a piece of a diamond. So you buy real assets. There have been quite a few companies in this area, but I am not too bullish on this. I think that there is little use in buying one of a thousand pieces of a house. Or they even translated it to shares. A share is already a piece of a company. So unless you're a Berkshire, you have a Berkshire Hathaway share, which I think costs like $150,000, you don't need to fractionalize it. What I'm quite bullish about is everything that's happening in the DeFi space, because it's a completely new way of looking at money transfer. The thing about the internet was that it was something where information is exchanged. The thing about blockchain is value can be exchanged. And that creates an entirely new ecosystem, which allows you not just to launch a product, but create an ecosystem around. So people can trade your product, they can borrow it, and do all kinds of interesting and rewarding things with it. And DeFi also circumvents the entire financial system. I mean, look at the companies with high inflation rates, where you're not allowed to invest in foreign currencies. Now, how do you hedge your risk? I'm not saying Bitcoin is necessarily great to hedge inflation. That may be one way, but I mean, every asset basically can be a hedge on inflation. But the access to a financial system that is not controlled by governments is quite interesting. Now, I think the big breakthrough will only come if there is some sort of regulation which allows the governments of this world, the states of this world, to still continue taxation, because a system outside of the normal regulatory system just doesn't make sense. We need taxes to pay for schools and all kinds of things, so you cannot take this out of the equation. But maybe we find a way to keep all the advantages of DeFi and still embedding it into a system that works for a proper government to function. So that's DeFi. Overall, there are lots of things in the gaming sector. Gaming is a 3 billion people industry. So it's not a 3 billion market. The market is far larger, but the gaming community approaches 3 billion people. And there are lots of opportunities. We talk about gamification of apps, and that just shows that if you want to have a good banking app, maybe you want to include some elements of gamification. Now, I'm not a gamer myself, so I had to learn how important this is. But it's a huge market, and it would be foolish to leave it aside. Everybody's talking about metaverse. That's another big word. And obviously, when people talk about metaverse, they talk about NFTs. And the best tweet I read yesterday was that the Russia-Ukraine war has now officially replaced NFTs as the topic people love to talk about but don't fully understand. NFTs are completely misunderstood because they can be so many things. NFT is basically just a token, a placeholder for something else, but they are so versatile in what they can do. It provides huge opportunities, but we'll see what comes out. I mean, I'm still divided about metaverse. I mean, many young people spent most of their time indoors, even after COVID, and did so before COVID, playing games or talking to their people. So they are basically already in a kind of metaverse. So the moment Apple comes out with, I don't know, a pair of glasses that are much lighter and that maybe are coupled to the iPhone, so the iPhone has the processing power and it just transfers it to these glasses that are much lighter than the big and heavy ones that you see today. That could be a real breakthrough. I mean, we've seen Apple taking an existing technology and making it consumer friendly a few times before. So metaverse obviously is a big thing that everybody tries to understand. It may be a complete failure. It may be big. I don't want to be quoted in 5 years like a Bill Gates from 20 years ago, although I wouldn't dare to compare myself with him, obviously. But it's pretty, I mean, for our age group, it's difficult to understand that people want to spend so much time indoors. But there's a fair chance that metaverse will become huge. And the question is, when will we have a hardware that allows you to dive into the metaverse easily? So these are big topics. There's a big topic about IoTs. IoTs are these small devices, Internet of Things, basically everything small that has an operating system. I mean, a car today has over 200 IoT devices. So it's basically 200 computers on the car. And this software has to be updated. It has to be managed. It has to be inventorized. And at any stage, if there's a security risk, the car manufacturer must be able to immediately update the software. And I don't know if you've seen this movie, iRobot, where some evil, there was a robot company and there was a software update, a malicious software update, and all of a sudden all these friendly robots turned hostile. And that's, I know it's just a movie, but it's super easy. And what have we seen today with the Russian-Ukraine conflict? We've seen attacks on their IT system. So having much more safety, much more security in the management of software is a huge issue, and blockchain can help address that. We just invested in one firm. It's called Ashvin, that are doing this for the automotive industry, because you don't want your car to be taken over by a hostile force. And so far, this whole area of IoT is completely IoT security is completely neglected. And one last example is the entire world of financial services, including insurances. When you look at the back office of, for example, asset management companies, those are the companies that manage our fund money. There are so many manual processes behind those, these back office, you would never believe it. And those manual processes, they create a lack of compliance, because it's difficult to dynamically oversee, for example, a securitized package of mortgages. You don't know what the quality is. And you also know little about, for example, the original investors in your fund. It takes quite a long time to settle an asset a fund purchase. So all these things, through blockchain technology, through DLT technology, should make it safer, easier, and cheaper.
I actually had to smile on a few occasions when you've been talking about, because when the metaverse was a thing, when it released start taking off in the beginning, I always thought, wasn't there something like Second Life that was also a real big hype, but without virtual reality? And I kind of died down. I do believe there's still a strong community, but it's not as present in mainstream as it used to be, right? Remember a virtual store set up in life by many big companies, and now you don't hear anything about that anymore. And also when you said about DeFi, I always have in mind, yes, DeFi can work if it can be taxed and if it can be regulated, because there are two things certain in life. One of them is taxes and the second one is death. I do believe a DeFi financial system without any type of regulation and without any type of taxation, which is something some users want, will not work. And I do believe some regulation, some stabilizing regulation is also something that would get more users, risk-averse users, into decentralized financial services. That was quite low, what you had to say, I can tell. We met before for a little preparation, and I told you what we want to talk about. And now we are already at 30 minutes recording at this point in time. There was just one interesting point I want to get across. I want to ask you before we close this interview already. And the audience, you can go down here in the show notes. There's an audience feedback form, and you can request get Wolfgang back for a second interview. No problem at all. I was wondering, everybody who hears that now, everybody who knows you are an investor in blockchain, how can people apply for your programs? Where can they apply? Of course, we will share the links down here in the show notes. And what are some of the criteria you have in order for the proposal for the startup to be successful?
Mm-hmm. The easiest way to reach out to us is to hop on f6s.com and put in your application, and it's F6S, and you will probably find the name BlockRocket. BlockRocket is a sister company that we work quite closely with in venture capital, and BlockRocket is basically our scouting mechanism to find new startups. So either reach out to me on LinkedIn, and you will see a link to F6S on my profile, or just contact me directly. Now, in terms of the profile that we're looking at, we're looking to be the first or second money in. So very early stage. We're not afraid of the pre-seed stage, definitely pre-revenue, but most of the companies that apply to us already have at least an MVP or a prototype. Some already have some traction in the market, but it's also something that we can discuss with them, because the thing is about business plans. We get sometimes business plans where the financial revenues for the next 5 years are spelled out with two digits after the comma, after that point. So it's completely unrealistic. I don't want to see a financial plan. I want to understand the assumptions, what your business model is built on. And then we take a very close look at the founders team, and we use a psychometric. So it's basically a team assessment test to understand how the teams are working together, because the business model may pivot one or two times. It may change over time because some of your assumptions just turned out not to be realistic or plainly wrong. But if the team is good, they will react to it. And if there is some intellectual honesty on behalf of the founders, they will work to make it even better than their original assumptions. So if we have a great team,
and for everybody who's interested in what type of tests you're making,
let's talk.
Of course not. Okay. And for everybody who's interested in what type of tests you're making, of course not to cheat, but maybe to get an idea, what are you looking at? Are there some standardized tests out there that you may or may not use for that?
The There is a good test which is frequently used on 16personalities.com. I think they even have it in 20 languages. And it's like you have to go through, I think, 150 questions or so to find out what your strength is. There is no right or wrong in these tests. It's very much to understand how a team works together. Because if you have a founder team, you don't want them to be all to all have the same character. I mean, you have introvert people, you have extrovert people. I mean, usually the CTO is more introvert, and that's what he should be. More pensive, more thinking about the technology. And if you have a salesperson, well, you want him to be as extrovert as possible and to openly minded. So that's the intention behind. And we share results very openly and discuss these results very openly with our founders. And some of them have told us that they use it for future recruitment purposes. They let their new applicants also run through this test to understand if they fit into the company and to the existing founders team. So we very much believe in that and have so far not seen any resistance from the founders to.
I see. Well, that was one of the podcasts where I talked the least. Nonetheless, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as a guest. Hopefully to have you back in some time and talk a little bit more about your assumption and which one turned out to be true and which one to be wrong. And thank you very much for being a guest. It was just a pleasure having you.
Thanks very much, Joe. Glad to be here.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.